Welcome back to the programme. Right, let's get to some of your comments. Greg, I was enjoying listening to John, who was making good, valid points. He seemed to be happy he was cut off, as he said to yourself, you didn't agree with him. Get him back to finish the conversation, which you do with other people. It's just not fair, my personal view. Okay, well, two things happened. Firstly, John was driving, obviously, or was a passenger in a car on speakerphone. Secondly, he went into a bad reception area. Thirdly, I respectfully disagree with him in that I don't know what we need to do. I don't know how we need to do it. And this doesn't mean all of a sudden I'm full on green. I just recognise that, you know, I do believe that we need to change how we do things down the line. I don't know how we do it. I don't necessarily think the way things are being proposed now is the way to do it. And John's carried on his journey, and that's fine. And he might be back on into the future. I can't control time and mobile phone coverage. Hi, Greg. I'd like to know why fuel tax for road vehicles does not include third-party insurance and road tax. This would mean that people who used vehicles on the roads the most would pay more towards the upkeep of the road infrastructure and also reduce the cost of insurance for those who travel less. That would be bad for us, by the way. Like, I know what you're saying, and this has been proposed before, but if you think, say, for instance, in Dublin and Cork and Galway and Limerick, where people use cars, they travel very short distances compared to us. Like, I'll probably travel more to and from work today than someone living in Dublin and commuting in and around Dublin in a car might do in a week. So we would be we would be subsidising them. Is that, that's how it'd have to work. So I do way more miles than someone in Dublin does, or we do, or you probably do. So as I say, I've heard that proposed before, but I'm not sure that'd be good for us. Sometimes I wonder, would it be better for us if we ask Britain nicely, can we give Donegal to them? The elected government here do not give two hoots about Donegal. Ooh, I'm not sure about that. I don't think Britain cares too much about Northern Ireland. And I don't think Belfast sometimes cares too much about the northwest of Northern Ireland. So I'm not sure that would be good for us. The further you are from the seat of power, oftentimes the less you get. The Port Tunnel is a bypass under the city centre. There are alternative routes. I work in Dublin and very rarely have used it. The tolls are there for years and years. Okay, I know, but listen, you're down there and you know that, but someone who doesn't realise, they could end up paying an extra €26. And listen, I've went through the Port Tunnel by accident, if the truth be told. I missed the turn off and ended up going through it, so it's no harm to know. When travelling in Dublin, put your destination into your phone, sat-nav, and then select avoid tolls. It will take you on a toll-free route. Problem solved. That comes in from Noel. Yes, indeed, Noel. I did that coming out of Dublin last week, and I think we were directed onto the N2 and then rejoined the road to Monaghan. I'm terrible at geography and all that. Avoided all the tolls, and it didn't actually take any extra time. Okay, just before the bingo numbers, and it is jackpot day, this is a longer formatted text here. Hi, Greg. The Underditch story yesterday was shocking but not surprising. The opinion of the Attorney General was clearly heavily weighted, as shown by the inaccessibility of the redress grant and the fact that modular homes are not going to be provided by the state for victims of defective blocks. As an affected council tenant, it was confirmed to me by council staff that funding for the repair rebuild of council house stock has been denied by the minister for the past 3 years. It was also confirmed that the scheme for council properties is similar to that of private home owners, but does not include any funding for temporary rehousing or storage costs for tenants. From what I'm told, only two people are responsible for the organising and planning of council house repairs. This is despite the fact that council staff has suggested that the 1,100 figure publicly given for affected council houses is in fact nowhere close to the real figure. This makes council tenants third-class citizens behind private homeowners. The staff allocated to dealing with the issue are overwhelmed and also dealing with their own affected homes, so I feel for them in their position, overworked with their hands tied due to the refusal of funding. It was therefore concerning to hear Councillor Ali Farron of 100% Redress's comments yesterday. He stated, and I quote, "The main talk at the moment is about getting modular homes for council tenants to move council tenants, but all these private houses in front of me, they're going to need houses to move into. I hope this doesn't mean that he too wishes to prioritise private homeowners over rent-paying council tenants who are being utterly neglected in this entire crisis. The fact is that the council has a legal obligation to cancel tenants, which they're neglecting thus far. The council's liable in the event of injury or harm being caused by tenants by substandard rental properties owned by the council. This should be at the forefront of the council's priorities. Lastly, the councillors and the executive have also failed, in this texter's opinion, to plan for this crisis by neglecting to provide for adequate numbers of social housing projects to be included in the county development plan over the past decade. This crisis and its handling by the state is a clear indication that Donegal is more than the forgotten county. It's the purposely neglected county. And they conclude it is unacceptable. In this week's Your Voice, Your Community, we look at the art of crocheting. Crocheting. It is crocheting, isn't it? It is. Cindy? Crocheting.
Crocheting.
You know when you read something, you know it's wrong. Right, crocheting. Have you crocheted before? But anyway, the question is, have you crocheted before? Oh, yes, it's French. Or are you thinking of trying it out for the first time?
No.
Right. You're a teacher of crochet classes in Inchelm. Cynthia Smith, good morning to you. And you're also flanked by your students, Ava and Cara. Good morning, girls.
Hi.
And is it you on, are you in the red jumper, Ava? No? Okay. Cara, what are you holding there?
My star pillow.
Wow, that is absolutely gorgeous. You made that from scratch?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Cindy, talk to us about crocheting then. And is it in vogue? Is it popular? What's the story?
At the moment, it is popular. I don't know if you saw in the news Taylor Swift stepped out in a crochet dress, which has turned everyone into a bit of a frenzy. It is definitely coming back into fashion, and which is great because it's great for mental health, and it's also teaching everyone a new skill, which I think was dying out. You know, people need to learn a skill. Not everything's going to be digital forever.
Of course it isn't. And we tend to go a certain distance, then we sort of come back a little bit, don't we, to more traditional things. So what is the base material? It's yarn. What is yarn?
Yarn, nowadays it's not like before where it was just wool. Nowadays they're making yarn out of anything. There's a lot of companies that are recycling fishing nets, plastic, all sorts of stuff to make yarn to try and make it more eco-friendly. So yarn and a hook and scissors and a needle and away you go.
And what's the difference between crocheting and knitting?
Crocheting is one hook, knitting is two needles.
Okay. Right, we'll talk to you a little bit more. I want to speak to Ava first. Ava, come here. When did you start crocheting?
About 2 months ago.
Okay. Have you made anything yet?
I've made a handbag and I've made
a security
blanket for like a baby.
Not for yourself.
No.
And why did you decide to take it up?
I'm into arts and crafts.
Right.
And I seen it and I was like, I'll give it a shot. So. Mm.
But in terms of like making something like a handbag, and it, you know, I mean, you actually can create something that you can use, and you know, obviously, dependent on how well you pull it off the first time, whatever it might be, you know, people will come on and say, "Well, where did you get that?" You know, it's quite cool to be able to say, "I made it myself."
Yeah,
I think it is anyway. And what do you enjoy about it?
It's peaceful. It takes your mind off everything.
You seem like a chilled character anyway, though.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much will get you excited. You're just relaxed anyway, which I love. It's the opposite of me. Cara, obviously we've seen what you've made. How long have you been crocheting?
Like 6 months, maybe.
Right. And how did you get involved in it? What attracted you to it?
I've seen a few videos online and I wanted to try it out.
Yeah. And you've got that beautiful star-shaped cushion on your lap there. How long did that take to make?
About 4 days.
Really? So, what, an hour or so a day or something? Or is it hard work?
It's not really that hard, because you don't really think about it.
So you find that when you're crocheting, you're chilled a bit like our friend Ava here. You sort of just, you're in the moment.
Yeah.
And what did you think of Taylor Swift wearing her crochet dress?
Well, I thought it was really nice.
Have you started yours yet?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm sure your dad will want plenty of yarn for whatever dress you decide to make. You'll have to buy triple whatever you're planning. And it's great, isn't it, Cindy, to see younger people getting involved in it and seeing the benefits of it, really.
It is nice.
You know, and I think sometimes when you can't really necessarily pinpoint exactly why you enjoy it, you know, that sort of a way, I think that's actually a really good sign, because you're just in it. You're just doing it, aren't you?
Yes, yeah.
Right, so you are originally from South Africa, Cindy, are you?
Yes.
And how long have you been living in Ireland now?
For 3 years.
Okay, and was it a fella dragged you over here?
It was. Okay. A Donegal man.
good stuff. But you were crocheting in South Africa, so how did you get involved in it? Or was it passed down generationally, or what's the story?
Yeah, my mom and my auntie and all of them did it growing up, and I was watching my auntie make something. My cousin's a designer, and she was making something for one of his shows, and I said to her, that looks quite interesting, and I sat with her and I picked it up, and that was 18 years ago, and I've been doing it ever since.
But did you sort of get an extra focus on this when we were all sort of told not to do anything?
No, I've been making blankets and clothes. And
oh, yeah, your arrival here actually coincided with the COVID lockdown.
Yes, I arrived during COVID. And I took a break over then, actually, because I have two little ones. Mm-hmm. And then only just now started again with the classes.
And I presume you sort of used social media to get the message out there. What kind of response did you get?
I used Facebook, one of the local groups, and to test it out, and it was absolutely amazing. I think within the first 2 or 3 hours, I had about 300 responses of people interested and wanting to get going at some point through the year.
That's quite remarkable, isn't it? That's a huge response.
There's lots of people and children that are interested, which is great.
And was that the first time you had taught? And I'm just wondering how, because it's one thing having the skill set yourself, right? But it's another skill on top of that, sort of being able to educate other people to pick it up in a way that engages them and infuses them.
Yeah. Well, I had taught a few of my friends back home, and when I was here, obviously trying to do something by myself, because I've got, like I said, the little ones, my friend said, you're such a good teacher and you taught me so well, why don't you try it? So I thought, well, I'll try it. And so far, so good. they've all walked away with something after their first 6 weeks, which I think is a good sign.
Fantastic. And even if it's something as simple as learning how to crochet a hat for a newborn, or like Ava did, a comfort blanket, it's such a personalized gift, isn't it? Because it's beautiful, but your time's in there as well, isn't it? And you know, your artistic flair, which I think, you know, even if it were for that alone, it would be well worth it. So in terms of sort of the, there are different stitches, and you can educate me in that regard, but I'm just wondering, are there different ways, like, you know, obviously there's a strong tradition in this county of tweed, wool, yarn and what have you, right? Do we have a different approach? Have you learned that maybe we've done things anyway differently or in a different way to say, for instance, what you would have been familiar with in South Africa?
Yes, Irish crochet is like a skill all on its own, how you guys do it, especially like the Irish lace. And that takes a lot of patience and a lot of time, because that art has been perfected.
Yeah, so you teach, as we've been talking about, and maybe you might let us know if anyone's interested, if there's any spaces coming up. But also you have created your own label as well, your own brand. What's that called?
Phoenix Rose.
Lovely.
We've got two brands, Phoenix Rose and Energy 17.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of stuff do you produce?
At the moment, I'm busy making, on the crochet side, the bags and some jumpers and dresses to go in store by the autumn, so when that starts. But stuff you can use, not something that's just going to hang on the back of a chair.
Yeah, but a hand crocheted dress is, you know, it's a valuable commodity. Do you know what I mean? These are, it's not bespoken that it's not made to measure as such, but, you know, these are handcrafted head-turning items. Like, they require an awful lot of time to output them, I presume.
Yes, it does. And everything would be one of a kind, really, because you're not going to mass produce with it.
Right, Ava, you're 12 weeks doing it, right? You're enjoying it. But you're just getting out of it what you want to. You don't have any real plans as such with it, do you? It's just really just enjoying it and knocking out the odd blanket and hat here and there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, very good. And I suppose too, you see the artistry coming out in people as well, be they young or older. And Cara, and I'm not saying this anything against you, Ava. I can just see what Cara's created here. There's obviously an artistic flair with wee 13-year-old Cara there. I'm asking you as the teacher to big her up. I can't climb through the camera and do this for you.
Cara is very talented in all arts. I've seen her drawing. She's learning sewing. I'd be very surprised if she went down a different route as she got older. She's very artistic.
And
the stuff she makes is good. She's really made a shirt, a little vest. Wow. She made two, actually. Yeah.
Have we a fourth voice in the room?
Cara being underage, her mum is here.
I was just going to think that sounds very much like a mother's voice there, backing up her 13-year-old daughter. Are you going to say hello to me?
She's saying no.
Is she wearing the little black top that Cara made? And come here, do you know when you, with the big response you got to this, Cindy, and it's kind of traditional, it's time-consuming, it's kind of anti-everything in modern society, isn't it, that we might put our phone down and stop scrolling TikTok for an hour. Do you know what I mean? It kind of goes against the grain of, do you think we're seeking a break from the pressures of life, the technological pressures that are there? I mean, obviously some of them are self-imposed, but it's like watching a good film. It's great because you put your phone away, don't you?
Yes, you know. Exactly. And I know, like, my class last night, funny enough, one of the ladies had forgotten to put her phone on silent. And as it rang, she went, oh, I forgot to do that. Like, because these 2 hours is her break.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, so how do people find out more about any upcoming classes and maybe even more details about your brands and what have you?
They can WhatsApp me or text me or call me. Or I've also got some social media set up on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, what's your Facebook page?
Facebook page is The Rabbit Hole.
Perfect. How many names do you want? We've got The Rabbit Hole, which leads The Rabbit Hole, which leads to
The Rabbit Hole is the shop where I host some of my classes.
Yeah, Rabbit Hole. Then it leads into the two brands.
I'm a busy girl.
It's a conglomerate. All right, brilliant stuff. Okay, so check out The Rabbit, and it's focused in Inishowen really at the moment, isn't it? That's where you're based,
isn't
it?
At the moment, yes. I happen to travel out, but more in Inishowen area.
Fantastic, and keep an eye on the store as well with the work that's coming through for the autumn season. Presumably that's your target, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Ava, keep up the great work. Lovely to chat to you. It's like, has someone got a gun to you? Like, Ava's sitting here like, I only came in for a cup of coffee. What am I doing chatting on the radio for? I've made one bloody blanket. Oh, I'm only joking, Ava. It's been lovely to have you on. You've been attending the class in Carndonagh 12 weeks, and I know you're loving it. And Cara, 13, mother's in the background there. Obviously, you're very talented as well, very artistic. And listen, best luck to the future. It's been lovely speaking to you all. And I would say, too, there's a great focus in what you're doing, but I imagine, too, there's a lovely sort of friendship interaction buzz at the classes as well, Cindy. I'm getting that from you. That's a nice element to it as well.
Yeah, it's great. It really is great.
Listen, really appreciate you coming on. Is there anything anyone wants to add, or are we all good?
We all good.
Did someone say TikTok?
Yeah, we also on TikTok.
Did you say TikTok? Right. What's the TikTok then?
The Rabbit Hole.
Okay, brilliant. Check it out there. I'm going to go and check it out now during the next break. Listen, it's been lovely having you on. Thanks for being good sports as well.
Great.
These are all fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cindy. Thanks, Ava. And thanks, Cara. Take care of yourselves.
Thank you.
That was Your Voice, Your Community, which allows us to talk about different things. And that was crocheting. Check out The Rabbit Hole on Facebook and on TikTok, and you'll find out more about it. It's beautiful, isn't it? Lovely to see people sort of engaging in more traditional creative pastimes as well. And I thought remarkable, Cindy said there when she put out the call on social media using a different platform than her own, saying, look, I'm thinking of doing classes, 300 messages. Can you imagine getting 300 messages for anything? Really quite impressive. And they seem really, really lovely people. And Ava and Cara, great fun and great sports as well. And Cindy Smith. And hello to Mum in the background as well. Too shy to come on camera and say hello to us. All right, and just to remind you, as we build up to the big game at the weekend on Sunday, in fact, Donegal versus Galway, Oisin Kelly and the crew are down for a special school show live from Glenties. It's at 8 o'clock, Caroline. Is the score on from 8? I think it's an 8 o'clock start for the score. I'll double check that, but I believe it is. But listen, you can listen on the radio as well, but you can also watch it, which is cool if you are at home and there's nothing on between 8 and 9 and what is on. You can watch it on your telly as well on the YouTube channel. I've got water in my right ear. A caller says, Greg, water in your ear. Put your head to one side. Hold your ear. Or I think Specsavers can vacuum or clean your ear. All right, might be a Specsavers job. I don't know. Hi, Greg. Let's get behind Donegal this weekend. It is unbelievable that we are in an All-Ireland semi-final. Galway's taking a massive amount of support to Croke Park, but so will Donegal. It's important to make Croke Park a sea of green and gold. In Jim, we trust. Dunanal Abu. Listen, there's a huge buzz around the place and it is going to be packed out, no doubt about it. Hi, Greg. Can we draw a correlation between the plantation and the current policy of mass immigration, replacement migration being used to replace the native Irish population in Ireland? I don't know. You can. I don't know enough about it to go down that route. To be honest with you, genuinely don't. I'm not being... obtuse, is it? I don't know. Call wants to know if secretaries working in a solicitor's office are bound by confidentiality, and if they breach this, do you report it? Callers wants to know, secretaries work in a solicitor's office. Are they bound by confidentiality? I'd imagine they were. Another person contacted me on Facebook, actually, and they say as follows. Where is it here now? There's so many messages that come in on Facebook. I struggle to get back to them all. It was along the lines of, can you refuse a smart meter? It's on their property, so they can. They say they can withhold access to it. You can refuse a smart meter. They're not compulsory. But what the message is that effectively they'll no longer be supported or maintained, and eventually you're going to have to switch to a smart meter. But at this time, yes, of course, you can still... retain your old meter if you wish. The Attorney General should be sacked. After all, we pay his wages. Well, he's no longer the Attorney General, if you're referencing that on the ditch story there. Right, okay. It is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio, and we've still loads to come over the next wee while. Our next guest is Ava McDermott. She's going to be joining us very shortly. In fact, I think Ava's there. She's joining us as we speak here. It seems strange that the AG was concerned that DCB-affected homeowners would use the money for home improvements rather than remedial works, while the government is actively promoting SEAI grants for improvements and upgrades to vacant and derelict properties around the country. Well, listen, it's probably no coincidence that they've separated those two out. That you build your house to older standards and then get another grant to bring it up to modern standards. The AG was concerned that we might try and rebuild our houses into a better standard than they were recently. All right, is Ava McDermott there? Ava, are you there? Are you ready to speak to me? If you are, say hello. I can't quite hear you. Okay, Ava's going to be... You are there, Ava?
Yes, hello.
Good morning to you. You recently graduated in film studies and production from Queen's University Belfast, and you have a short documentary made called I'll Keep Them Safe. Well, talk to me about this documentary, Ava.
So, Greg, the documentary, the inspiration behind it was, obviously, I'm an affected homeowner and I moved out of my house when I was just finished my Leaving Cert, starting university. And obviously now I'm graduated and I'm still not back in my house. So obviously that was very rough on me as a young person. And the idea came because I was doing a module in university called Nonfiction Film Practice. And nonfiction is obviously documentary. So I decided to bring it to my production group that this was something that was going on in my life that I had access to. And, you know, there was a lot in the media about it at the time. But everything in the media was about how the scheme was working and about, like, all that kind of stuff. And there was nothing really focused in on mental health and well-being. Mm-hmm. So I decided then that it would be a good idea to do a piece about how it emotionally affected me as a young person and how it affected my family.
And we can learn that in watching I'll Keep Them Safe, and we'll talk about where people can access that in a moment. But, like, so you were obviously a young person going through this. you're also trying to study and better yourself, but you're also seeing the impact this is having on yourself and your wider family. Is it easy for you to try and explain the emotional impact of the defective concrete blocks on you individually?
I may be honest now, the film kind of showcases what my mental state kind of was at that time and how it continues to be and like how it has affected me. And like a lot of the main focus in the film as well is it is a film about grief at the end of the day, like you're losing something. Mm-hmm. And I also, my grandfather, he passed away in last year, 2022. And I found a clip of him singing My Lovely Irish Rose, mm-hmm. which is the song native to Inishowen where I'm from. And I just happened upon it when I was doing this project. And I thought that would be so brilliant because he is now obviously not with us anymore. And the memory I have is of him in my house. So I decided to use that in the soundtrack. And it was kind of like it's keeping within the theme of grief. So the house and then also the family that you once had that is no longer there. And something so special to you that is no longer there.
Everyone deals with things differently. I'm just wondering, was it difficult, particularly difficult for you in making I'll Keep Them Safe, to sort of really focus on and go through what you went through and what you are continuing to go through?
Well, I didn't really go into making the film with a particular plan. It kind of just was a happy accident, I won't lie.
No, I get you.
Yeah, so I mean, it was a long process. Like, it was a 6-month process, and I was very lucky that I had people around me who were able to keep me subjective, because obviously I'm in the thick of it. And everyone else who is working with me, there's two other girls, Matilda Heptonstall and Susie Lone, who are my production team. Those two girls aren't from Donegal. They didn't really know much about the crisis, and they were able to keep me kind of subjective to the whole thing. But as far as capturing how I was feeling at the time and how it affected me, I just kind of took it and ran with it. I didn't really have a particular plan, and it was all just a happy accident, as I said. But I do think it's important that people do keep talking about how this is affecting people emotionally and the impact that it's having on people emotionally. I know there's a big emphasis right now on, like, you know, the scheme and everything, and obviously that's important. But I think that some people are missing the real tragedy behind this, and that is people's mental health. And we need to be really, really careful about people's mental health, because as we all know, it can be really detrimental.
Yeah, for sure. And I know you're busy and probably don't get a chance to listen to us here, but that's a great deal of the focus that we have in terms of, you know, the lost lives, the broken lives, the broken relationships, the damage to younger people, both emotionally and physically. And I think, I'm not sure if you've seen the reports yesterday as it relates to the Attorney General's advice to government, and other conversations we've kind of had with government representatives, is that they don't seem to get what you're talking about. They don't seem to understand. Like, the Attorney General's not talking about we have to consider the impact this is having on young lives and marriages and relationships and instances of suicide and what have you. The conversation is about, well, we have to design this scheme because people in Donegal might try and shaft us and take too much money and do up their homes. So I think this kind of work is really important. I would love it to get in front of the people that make these decisions so they understand the actual impact it has on people's mental health. And of course, then it can have an impact on people's physical health, because that doesn't seem to be factored in to the decision-making process, Sava.
No, and I completely agree with you there. Like, it really does. This crisis is a, you know, an emotional crisis as well as like a physical crisis, like with the actual houses. Something as well that I just like to point out, we were one of the first families as well to go through this whole rigmarole, and we were one of the first families to actually have an engineer come to the property and do an assessment and get diagnosed with micro defective concrete blocks as it is known now. Mm-hmm. And at the time it was really hard because there was such a stigma around it.
Yeah,
it was nearly shameful to say, like, oh, my house is defective.
Yep.
But now, thank God, it's gotten to a place where everyone is in it together. So people have now banded together, and people are now working together and are supporting each other, which is what we need to do as affected homeowners. We need to just band together and keep each other supported and keep each other up, because if we don't do it, like, who else is going to support us, you know, that kind of way?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing this, because as I say, it's hard sometimes to capture the impact this has on younger people. We know it, but sort of constructed from the person themselves, It's called I'll Keep Them Safe. There's a website established to host this short film. It's called IllKeepThemSafe.ie. IllKeepThemSafe.ie. I'm going to look at that later, Ava. Well done on it in terms of, you know, using this as a focus as part of your studies as well. And good luck with your career and future. And I hope for your family as well that there is some hope or some light at the end of the tunnel in this awful crisis.
Thank you so much, Greg.
All right, take care, Ava. Thank you.
All right,
that's
thank you.
Ava McDermott there. As I say, IllKeepThemSafe.ie. Check it out. There's a YouTube link there as well. Okay, let us see. A couple of comments here. Hi, Greg. Just wondering if any of your listeners are in the same situation as myself. Me and my family are going to the Donegal game on Sunday, and we've noticed that the tickets for the Cusack stand are not appearing on Ticketmaster. Because we've children, this is where we need to go. Does anyone know if they're going to go on sale? I've been on Ticketmaster since the day they went on sale, and now I'm beginning to panic a little in case I don't get the tickets if I leave it too late. Thanks, great. Thanks, Greg. Great show. Thank you. Well, I think the Cusack stand is sold out. Children can also go on to the Davin stand, but I checked Ticketmaster's, and the only available tickets were in the 700s, right up at the very, very back. So I don't know. Someone out there in the know might know better than I and might be able to give some advice to that listener. I just hope you don't miss that. I have noticed a lot on social media, though, that people are putting up two adults, two children kind of ticket packages because they can't go. Greg, if I refuse a smart meter, what are the consequences? Does anyone know? There are no consequences, unless things have changed drastically since we last did an interview. It's up to you. The consequences might be in that eventually the smart meter, the old school meter you have in your house may break down and can't be repaired, or they refuse to service it or work with it into the future. I don't know. But at the moment, if you don't want a smart meter, you don't have to have one. It's completely up to you. That was the information we had from the people that are putting them in. This caller says, I'm a pensioner and live only on that money, only on the pension. I have a medical card. The last twice I was at the GP, I needed bloods done. On both occasions, I was charged an extra €20 to have them done. How is this fair and why are they not covered by the medical card? They are vital for the diagnosis of my condition, so why is it that they are not part of the system covered under medical cards? €40 may not be a lot to some people, but it's a lot for me. Every penny I have is accounted for. I'm not going to even comment on that because it's quite convoluted what bloods are covered and what bloods are not covered. So we'll dig around and I'll get the actual information as to specifically what bloods are covered. You mentioned that your blood tests were for a diagnosis purpose. I was under the impression they should be included, but I don't want to mislead because it is quite important. So leave that with us. I'll get the actual diktat from the HSE because we have had that before and I'll get that to you. Just on the tickets, Greg, tell that listener to try Super Value Battle Buffet for tickets. Another, hi Greg, regarding the tickets for the Donegal v Galway game, I believe the tickets for Cusack and Hogan may have gone to season ticket holders and the clubs where people are paying yearly membership. Okay. Another one here just before I go to our next guest. Morning, Greg. John's 100% correct. You don't agree with John and you don't and won't agree with me ever. I'm not a climate change denier. Yes, it's happening, but I know who's in charge of the climate. But I also know who's pushing the climate agenda and I know why. And if you knew the person who is behind this climate agenda and why, you wouldn't get out of your bed in the morning. That comes in from Mary. Okay, Mary, that's fine. But your point, your feelings and my feelings and John's feelings can all coexist. One doesn't have to cancel the other out. And I don't have to align my thoughts and feelings with you and then stay in bed all day. I have to get up and go to work and pay bills and look after the family. I take your point. I'm not a climate denier either. But if you want to name the individual behind the climate agenda and get it out there, let's see. Peter Mullen is the owner of the Great Inishowen and Derry Tour Experience. Fulch Ireland approved. Good morning to you, Peter.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners.
Nice to talk to you. Good, good, good. A significant couple of days on the, I suppose, the Ireland calendar, the 11th and 12th of July.
Yeah, it's a period of great celebration for some people and a time of great trepidation and fear for others.
Now, you said in a correspondence to us that you think it's time we acknowledge the true historical truth. So from your perspective, or from history's perspective, I suppose you might feel, what truths do we need to sort of acknowledge?
Well, the truth that both Catholics and Protestants fought on both sides in the battles in Ireland, and that the Pope was a significant backer of King William III in Ireland. And if we could come together to acknowledge these facts, you know, we could maybe celebrate the victory of the Irish over the French instead of this smaller conflict that we seem to get tied up on, the religious conflict.
You point out too that the Pope was influential. Is it in the tradition of lighting bonfires? The Pope of the time, of course, I'm talking of.
Yeah. The Pope at the time was Pope Alexander the VIII, and whenever King William III or Queen William of Orange was victorious in the Battle of the Boyne, he had the Te Deum sung in Rome. This is a very powerful ancient Christian hymn, and also asked Catholics in Ireland to light bonfires on hilltops to celebrate the victory at the Boyne.
Well, talk to us a bit about the Grand Alliance versus France, the time frame and how that unfolded.
Well, the likes of France and the Dutch were knocking lumps at each other for decades. And in September 1688, France crossed the Rhine to put pressure on the Pope to acknowledge his claims over some of the Dutch territories. But the Pope was on the side of the Dutch, so he refused to do so. And so started the War of the Grand Alliance. France was a big superpower at the time, much bigger than the likes of America is today. I mean, the Grand Alliance was comprised of the Dutch Republic, England, Scotland, the Holy Roman Empire, the Spanish Empire, and part of Italy called the Savoyard Empire. So it was an intercontinental war. It was fought mostly in Europe, but it was also fought in America, India, West Africa, and indeed Ireland, which is where our story is.
Mm. And do you feel that we sort of go back in time, back in history, to a point where there is division and conflict, whereas if we went back further, like there is an awful lot of things in life, perhaps more to unite us than to divide us?
Oh, there certainly is. We're a mixture of many invasions. I mean, I grew up on the waterside of Derry. My great-grandfather would have been a member or a leader in the Orange Order. There's a lot more to unite us than divides us. I mean, we Catholics and Protestants fought on both sides of those wars in Ireland. And as I say, the Pope backed King William against King James, who was backed by France at that time. So, I mean, there is a lot more that unites us. I mean, the whole issue around King William's sexuality as well, the very fact that he most probably was bisexual, you know, could, you know, unite us even further. Mm-hmm. That we could celebrate that fact as well.
I think a lot of biases, a lot of fears or a lot of hate is handed down from generation to generation. Do you think we should be sort of reviewing what's taught in schools to maybe try and, you know, broaden people's perspectives in this regard and in regard to our history?
Most certainly. I mean, you know, a lot of people are afraid to talk about this subject. A lot of people are, you know, shy away from it. And too often just accept the narrative that's told that, that obviously Catholics were beat by Protestants during this time, and it confirmed their superiority, which is wrong.
Mm. All right. And if anyone wants more information about the tours that you're running, Peter, how can they find you?
Well, I'm on TikTok.
Good stuff.
I'm on Amazon. my book, Struggle, A Walkthrough Irish History and Rebellion. And I'm also on Facebook. You'll get me under the Guinness Shown, the Great Guinness Shown and Dairy Tour Experience.
All right, Peter, listen, thank you for that. Peter emailed us in, thought we'd get him on for a chat to get his views. We do appreciate it. Thank you very much, Peter. A caller says, I'm the old school, but I feel people working in offices should be confidential. Just referring to the previous question about solicitors' offices, I agree with you, and I'm not sure if I'm old school or not. Greg, does this annoy others as much as it annoys me? And when we talk of others, it's those of you that drive around Letterkenny. The roundabout at the old Dunn stores in Letterkenny, so many people drive onto the roundabout instead of waiting back till it's clear, and many cars don't go around it. They drive over the top of it. Surely that roundabout needs curbs or cones to stop people driving over the top of it. And I know the one you're talking about, you sort of, if you hadn't passed the station, the hotel there, left is Old Town, right is wherever you might be going. Yeah, I find those roundabouts you can drive over are kind of like an invitation to drive over. I'm not admitting to driving over it, but it kind of just invites you to do so, doesn't it? I'm not sure if there's many collisions or, you know, wee bumps and scrapes in that part of the town. Also, I don't think it has the capacity to establish a proper roundabout, and I haven't seen one of those little ones with cones or anything around it. But anyway, listen, let's throw it out to the listeners, see if it annoys anyone else, if it's something people think needs to be looked at. It seems strange that the then Attorney General was concerned that defective concrete blocks affected homeowners would use the money for home improvements. I've read that one out already, yeah, and the SEI grant. Yeah, indeed. Okay, let us see. Who are the managers of the defective concrete civil servants? The Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil governments. Who are civil servants accountable to but to Fianna Fáil governments? Who's supposed to address these crises but the Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil Green government? Who tells the civil servants what to do? But some people believe the relationship goes in the other direction. But anyway, if civil servants don't do as they're told by the government, then who's managing who? Seems to be the permanent civil service. If so, by elected government, we will forever have defective concrete housing, children's hospitals, carers, family laws, crisis, etc., won't we, they say. Sorry, we are to blame. Look at the council elections and polls. We're fools ourselves, I think they say.